It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, Doc. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanty Show.
Shoot the Wiz, Guardians of the Galaxy. Keeping a mixtape going for 20 years is an awesome superpower.
I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
I'm Mike.
I'm David.
And I'm Rachel.
And this is Rachel's first episode as an official member of the podcast.
Yay!
Congratulations. You get nothing for this, but you know, it's good. Good for you. So
I don't even get a rock?
No.
I was promised a rock.
Given your day job, you can get rocks anytime you want.
But the good news is now you don't have to be short about saying your bio on the show because you don't actually get to say it anymore.
Yeah.
You become irrelevant. Isn't that great?
Yeah. No, it's omnipresent.
There's that too. But as Paul let us know, we are talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, which I just finally got to see. Not like now when we're recording a few days before that, but I got to see it. So that was great. And that's basically it. So why don't we just dive in? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Let's start with general reactions. I'm just going to go from left to right. We'll start with you, Paul. General reactions.
I can see why this movie is the number one movie of the year. It unabashedly deserves its status. It's a lighthearted Marvel movie, but yet with enough drama, tension, and character development to not feel as untethered as I might have thought of going in. I was afraid this was just going to be a crappy joke fest. Instead, it's one of the better Marvel movies in their Marvel Cinematic Universe.
High praise. What about you, Mike?
So for me, this is the best Star Wars movie in the last 30 years.
I was thinking Firefly.
Well, Firefly is enough its own thing for me to not be a Star Wars movie, but while watching Guardians of the Galaxy the first time through, in one of the kind of climactic scenes, I was like, this giving me the same joyful feeling of watching the original Star Wars trilogy. And the balance of humor and drama and the ensemble cast and the big stakes and the heroism. And it just has all of those flavors while also definitely being its own thing that I was just utterly delighted by the film.
Fair enough. All right. What about you, David?
Yeah, I had a really good time with it too. And I think it, a lot of what you two have said, and I think it also cements Vin Diesel as the king of heartbreaking farewell voiceover lines. So we are Groot up there with Superman.
Yeah. Oh, from Iron Giant.
Yeah.
Oh,
I love that movie. Movies, Jet, that you're right. Like, it seems like that's what he was born for. You know? Like, he got his run as Riddick, but that's really what he's got. You know? People who don't say a lot of lines and then, like, die really sad at the end, but don't really die. Because if you think about it, you're right, David. Groot is just the Iron Giant.
I mean, I'm going to have to disagree with you about that being his thing, because his thing is really just, like, taking a shirt off and then flexing, you know, like his right arm so we can see his biceps. I'm just saying.
He does have really nice biceps.
Mm-hmm.
I'd touch him. Is this podcast getting awkward for everyone?
Yeah.
All right,
you
Rachel.
Can make it so.
What about you, Rachel?
So, Guardians of the Galaxy made me cry over the relationship between a tree and a raccoon and like it. So, yeah, I mean, I would say this is my, I would say it's I would put it as the third best movie that Marvel's put out behind Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and the first Iron Man. But it's just so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm pretty much parroting what everyone else has said. I think it was so much fun. Rachel's right. It was fun. Like, there are a lot of movies where they're intended to be fun, but this was actually fun. Like, I imagine the Transformers movies are supposed to be fun, but when you go and see them, it's sort of like having, like, needles shoved into your eyeballs for 2 hours. It's just not fun. But this is actually a great deal of fun. It's lighthearted. It's got heart in it, despite the fact that the main character is kind of a doofus, but you kind of just love him. He's just adorable, and you just want to hug him. And yeah, I mean, I think Rachel, you're also right that I would disagree that it's just between those two, though. I would say that like the relationship between almost all of the characters was really, really touching, which doesn't always happen with ensemble casts. Like, there's always, it feels like in an ensemble cast you have like three people who are kind of like the background. They're not really important. And I thought there was a really good effort here to sort of draw out each of them as though they're really part of a cohesive unit. And I really liked that, because then it sort of like, there's that sad moment when Drax like pets Rocket, you know, and that really heartbreaking moment is like beautiful. It's just like, there's no lines. It's just beautiful. And you just want to hug them both. Also, Drax is adorable. I kind of really love Drax. But so why don't we just dive in with any particulars? Because, I mean, I know we've said some cutesy lines about it and how much we love the film. So obviously this is going to be a very glowing review of it. But is there anything of particular interest that we should probably tackle here? And keeping in mind that maybe for the time being, we should maybe not say, well, no, screw it. This is a spoilerific episode.
We already talked about Groot apparently dying and not dying. So, I mean,
yeah.
You're already done. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a spoiler. Spoil everything. We don't need to put up a line. None of that. Just go. So anything in particular people would like to sort of raise, either things that they thought were really compelling or criticism for that matter?
I'll go. It's more of a general thing, but we can dig into the pieces of it. This movie is an ensemble piece like the Avengers, but unlike the Avengers, it did not have the advantage of having five movies before it. And yet, for all of that, we managed to get distinct characters with distinct arcs, distinct backstories. We got to know, Peter Quill, aka Star-Lord, is the hero of the film. And he gets the most screen time and most development, but everybody else has their own story, their own life that they came together with. And the movie really puts that together well. And as you said, it's not just Peter Quill and his friends. It's the Guardians of the Galaxy. And I also loved how they got their name, which the trailers and all the promos sort of misimplied how they got their name, but we didn't get it to the end. But I liked it how they just basically took an insult and turned it into a strength that way. But yeah, we get nice distinct character development all in one film, which you don't get so much in Hollywood.
Fair enough. David?
Well, I think further to that as well, it manages to, work with all of these characters for audiences who, not only does it not have all those other films in the background, it doesn't require the knowledge of all those other films in the background, right? So it, even though it does reach out, to the wider Marvel universe, and, I loved seeing a celestial, in a scene, and, you know, it has all the various in jokes and nods and so forth. They're not required. So, I mean, I think a lot of the other films, the continuity is becoming so heavy, they're going to be increasingly opaque, quite possibly as we go along. But this one is a bunch of characters that audiences are going to be completely unfamiliar with for the most part, unless they happen to have been reading those comics, but is perfectly accessible, right? I mean, the rest of my family are not, perhaps sporadic viewers of the Marvel Universe, and they really, really enjoyed the film. In fact, they saw it long before I did.
So I actually wanted to jump on this because because we've been talking about that there's a difference in the way this film came about. I mean, obviously it's part of Marvel's big plan, which goes out to like 2100 or whatever. But it does seem that, and this is something I think we're going to tackle at least elsewhere in another podcast in relation to DC being crap fest. But here we have a very different model for Marvel. I mean, it's an ensemble cast, but unlike Avengers, it's set up completely out of the blue. So in fact, this film gives us origin stories, I think, for pretty much everyone who's at least a major character. Like John C. Reilly's character obviously doesn't. Like, I mean, other than the fact that we get some cutesy stuff about his family. But in terms of the main cast and the villains, mostly we get origin stories. Ronan doesn't, but we do get, at least we hear about Nebula and, Gamora. We hear about their origins. We hear about Drax, his origins, at least to some degree. And we hear about the origins of the group itself, how they came to be together. We actually see that in this film. That's a very different model, and I think it's really, really awesome that it, at least in my opinion, it was enormously successful, because that was a concern I think I had for this film, was like, how are they going to do this for these characters that nobody knows about? They're completely brand new, and how are they going to do it without making a film that's 12 hours long, like a Peter Jackson movie, and make it just unwieldy, and like have long bits of just really bad dialogue, and like, just dragging out fights until the end of time in order to sort of mask the fact that it's really poorly constructed, like a Transformers film. You know, all of this, that those are the flaws that could have existed, and they don't exist here, at least for the most part. I would say that there's some lacks, like some of the characterization is not quite where I would like it. But given the fact that we're guaranteed now Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I don't think I'm going to care, because we're going to have that in the next film. But if anybody else would like to jump in so I don't keep rambling. Rachel.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not quite as satisfied as you are with the whole origin story issue, but I think the bigger point is that they managed to tell a satisfying story without needing to expound upon the origin stories of the characters. Like, you know, you get the idea that Rocket is, you know, a genetically engineered and cybernetically enhanced organism. And that's all you really, you know, that's all you really get. You don't know what planet he's from or anything like that, or who did this to him. And you don't really need to for the story. So the writing was very well done in that they gave us as much as we needed to know and didn't really worry about giving us much more. And yeah, some of the characterization I was not quite as impressed by, but I also liked some of the little touches they gave. Like, I really loved the fact that the aliens, you know, for all that everybody is speaking some kind of common language for whatever hand-waved reason, I like the fact that the aliens were just like not getting the Earth metaphors at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and Drax especially. Oh my God. That was the moment where I started loving Drax, was when it was just like, you know, metaphors go over his head. Nothing goes over my head.
My reflexes are too good.
I would catch it.
I love that. You're right, cause I love Drax. Like, they're all funny in their own way. So, you know, Star-Lord dances, and he's adorable. He's a smart ass. And then you have Rocket, who's funny for unintentional reasons, because he's a freaking raccoon with like big guns, and he's a snarky, and he's got an attitude. And then Drax, because he's not that bright.
Drax is actually very bright. He just doesn't do metaphors. And I mean, you know,
well, that's
Rocket's
fair.
A furry little asshole. And I mean, my favorite was actually Gamora being like, "Who puts the sticks up everyone's butts? That sounds very cruel."
And I do love her her line that, you know, capping off a running gag with, "We're just like Kevin Bacon."
Yes. The humor in this is excellent. So, but I'll shut up because I saw Mike put a hand up. So go, Mike.
Yeah, I wanted to loop back to Drax to make one complimentary note and then one criticism. I think this was a post on Tumblr, and this just completely warmed my heart, and it's not something that I got out of the first viewing, but definitely took with me into my second viewing, was a report of someone going to the film with their autistic either child or kind of young relative.
It was his little brother,
thank you. And the little brother really intensely connecting with Drax because he doesn't do metaphors like me. And the fact that that character was written in such a way that that little boy and hopefully many other people could see themselves as a superhero and connect with a superhero, that means the world to me. But then on the other side, I think that there's just a real failure of writing with Drax toward the end of the film, where Drax is kind of, he's basically talking through the cast and how he appreciates them. And he just says, "And you, Gamora, though you are a green horror, you know, I appreciate you.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so he's literal minded. So he's never seen her exchange sex for money. So that doesn't work. The only way I could see that being something that wasn't just a complete failure of writing is if someone in the prison had called her a whore and he just internalized it without questioning. I think it's really just a failure. And that plus, one line from Peter Quill when he uses a colloquial bitch that, according to people who would know, is not something that white boys would use until way after 1988. With those two aside, I was totally in love with the writing.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, well, if we want to talk about the thing, like...
Go for it, Rachel. Yeah.
I was a little bit saddened about Gamora and Nebula.
Yeah.
Just because, especially Nebula. I mean, Nebula as someone who's, I think they're, you know, she's obviously going to be a villain, like the major villain later on, but her characterization was very, very unsteady. And, you know, part of it is, I don't really know how it looks to, or how it reads to someone who hasn't read anything in the comics. I actually read the tie-in comic about Gamora and Nebula and their relationship and all that. And, you know, especially the part where it's like, when I came into the movie, I was actually expecting when, you know, Gamora showed up and she was kind of like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, I know I work for Thanos, but I'm totally going to betray him now. I thought that was going to be like a double cross. And then we were going to find out, like, you know, she was going to switch sides again or something. And then I was like, okay. But then Nebula's like, well, I'm doing this for Dad. Well, now I hate Dad. And yeah. I didn't know what was going on with her. And it was very strange. And then, of course, I do just have to mention that, you know, for just one minute, we thought that we were going to have a Marvel movie that did not run on daddy issues and ran on mommy issues instead. But then, you know, we got to have the daddy issues anyway with Nebula and Gamora.
Yeah.
And I did get confused because I wasn't familiar with them. And I for a while there, I was trying to remember, okay, Nebula, you're the adoptive daughter of which of our bad guys? I was running to catch up a few times as to who was related to who and what or pseudo related. And that did confuse me.
You've got blue people from different races.
Yeah. And I think this is a problem with, like, they were trying to bite off too much here. Because, like, as Rachel, you said, right, like, Nebula, as far as we know, survives this film. Like, so she's probably going to show up again. Karen Gillan is going to show up again. It seemed to me that what they should have done for her character was not have her be actively involved in this plot, but have her be there with Thanos in that scene where Ronan shows up and, like, has a hissy fit. Right. Have her be there just kind of being that character who's like sitting in the corner. Like, remember, I think she's like working on her leg or something, but like, you know, just a lot of attitude, but we really don't know who she is. We just know she's Nebula and that's it. And then sort of just had Gamora's, sort of conflict with her father insofar as we want to have that conflict just for this film so that you could have more of that information. And that way that, like, cause I feel like they were trying to do like Gamora and Nebula are just opposite sides of the same coin. And it's like, that doesn't really work here. I feel like you should have saved Nebula for the next movie.
But that would have effectively cut her female characters in half.
Yes, yeah. But if the alternative is just shitty writing for female characters, I don't know if that's necessarily a better thing. I would much rather have one really exceptionally written female character than, like, you know, like a whole bunch of them that are not really well-written characters. And I didn't think that Nebula was a well-written character. I agree with you completely, Rachel, that it was very uneven. And I think that's because they were trying to cram her entire story into a movie that already had like 10 other people whose stories had been told. And it's just too much, I think. But I think, Paul, you, or well, no, Rachel, you had a hand first, so go.
Yeah, I mean, I think what they probably should have done was she could have been in the background and just kind of like, you know, still there on Ronan's ship when everything goes down. But I think what kind of tore it for me as far as you tried to do too much with her was when she was like, no, I'm going to betray Dad because reasons. And I mean, the one thing, I actually talked about this. I was on the Women in Marvel panel at NASFIC, and I mentioned, oh yeah, so we're going to have a female villain. We're going to have Nebula. Cause I actually had not even realized that Ronan was going to be a huge thing. And I don't know. I still don't get him, but, the thing that I was curious about is I was like, so when we finally have a female villain, are we finally going to get to see the male superhero fighting the female villain? Because there's always been this really weird thing where if there's a female villain, you're going to have like a female superhero and the two women fight and the guys don't fight because men aren't supposed to hit women. And to a certain extent, I actually really like seeing fight scenes where it's, you know, male character versus female character, as long as they actually fight like two people and it's not weird and sexualized and the guy at no time backhands the woman because that's just really stupid. But of course, in Guardians of the Galaxy, it was just Nebula versus Gamora because they're sisters and they're women and the women always fight each other. So that, I was just like, I don't know what my complete thought was there, but I wanted to bring that up. I also wanted to bring up the fact that Gamora kind of like, I got really tired of her being the quasi love interest for Peter Quill and then like the mommy stand in. And, you know, I felt like there was not enough of her because she was spending all of her time being, you know, something specifically to Peter Quill. And that kind of bothered me because Gamora is a really super awesome character.
Yeah.
So something that my fiance actually noticed, and since she told me about it, I'm completely on board with it, is the fact that the most of the team, they're like, oh, you know, Peter, you know, we'll follow your lead. You're the straight white guy, so you're the hero. But it's actually Gamora who is really the moral kind of lighthouse for the film, because Peter wants to get paid and Gamora wants to make sure the universe doesn't get blown up. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very notable that despite the fact that she's kind of the moral hero, we still end up with Peter Quill as the protagonist of the film, and not only protagonist in the way that the shape of the film works, but in how the film kind of regards him, kind of both narratively and visually.
Oh, we have her saying, we'll follow your lead, while suddenly sporting a miniskirt at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could have done without that. But at least they didn't have the shirtless scene that we saw in the trailers, because I would have hit the fucking roof.
I don't recall that one. Thankfully.
Yeah, nor do I.
Yeah, I do recall the trailer scene in question that Rachel's thinking of. Yeah, I wondered once again, like, how much of the trailer stuff got left on the cutting room floor or just was parallel stuff that they added in that was never going to be in the movie in the first place. But
I think the lineup certainly was an example of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as there are several moral centers that develop in this film, considering towards the end when Rocket Raccoon takes the lead in keeping the alien fleet from getting to the surface, and is very concerned about preserving minimizing collateral damage and danger to innocents. I mean, he takes the lead on trying to shoot all those down and trying to keep the bad guy from reaching the surface. So they all develop moral centers. I mean, Drax's arc in learning that just straight out revenge is not quite the right way to go about things, because it's not only bad for you, it's bad for everyone around you. So everybody learns and grows and learns a moral lesson and development, I think.
Yeah. Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like Rocket actually always was kind of there. It's just, you know, he never really had that opportunity to express it in the beginning. But I will say one thing I also really appreciated about the movie is that, you know, you do have like that bit of growth, but the movie was very self-conscious about the kind of tropes it was hitting, especially for that whole, like, you know, oh, team of misfits and losers coming together to save the galaxy, and was very openly making fun of them, I thought, which I really liked.
It's a genre-savvy movie, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and even the ending, I mean, does a lot of that. I love that Star-Lord just starts singing the song and dancing. And Ronan's like, what the fuck is going on right now? As this brilliant piece of distraction, and then, you know, as a way to get to work with his team. But, like, playing up his doofus status, because he sort of does these things throughout the film where he sort of portrays himself as being kind of goofy. And then doing it and having it actually work, because Ronan's so confused, he has no idea what dancing is. And they've established that, of course, as something earlier in the movie, too, where other characters who are aliens don't... They don't know what dancing is. They've never been to Earth, and apparently they don't dance in space, except for Groot.
It's awesome. But I think Groot learned that from Star-Lord. So
no, he had some kind of feeling, and he went with it.
Yeah, but I think he was inspired by that because of
no.
Peter Quill.
He had some kind of feeling, and he went with it. Paul.
So thank you, human exceptionalism.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. No.
Yeah, that's what
they're implying. Thank you, Kevin Bacon. Earth exceptionalism. There's a difference. Because Star-Lord is not, as we learn, fully human.
More daddy issues!
Right.
More daddy issues, yes.
His real dad is a star. I don't know if that's true. I just made that up.
But, no, his real dad is... Well, we don't know who his real dad is in the movie. I have my suspicions, but I don't know which comics they're going to pull in and which Eternal they're going to throw at as the character. What do you have an idea, David?
Well, no. I mean, the film broadly hints that it's, in fact, Michael Rooker character, or at least for much of the film, seems to be pointing that that's going to be the reveal. And then it seems clear by the end that, okay, it's not really him. But there were
the creepy blue dude with like the weird, like, needle penis thing.
Yeah. You know, the line, when he starts, some of his lines echo what, the mother's deathbed, dialogue, about being an angel or not being an angel, and then referring to him as son, in their final scene together.
Yeah, but then, of course, at the very end, that's taken away.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't they call the fathers like an ass or something?
Well, yeah. That could still have been read as him, because keeping that from the others. But I think what eliminates him as a possibility is when we're told that it's, you know, his father is something considerably older. And there's no way that character has got the gravitas to be something ancient, right?
It's Warlock.
Could be. He's in a cocoon in the collector's area.
True.
I don't know how accurate this. I'm reading something on.
No, don't tell me. I don't want you to ruin it. Do not ruin my life.
It may not be. And well, that
who
be,
knows? It could be somebody we've never been introduced yet. It could be the Silver Surfer. Who knows?
It would be. If this is
maybe
correct,
it's Galactus. Galactus and his mom got together in space and they had a good time. And then that's why Galactus is really upset, is because she died. That's fridging. We don't want to do that.
He's a fertility god, so there you go.
Is he a fertility god? Who is?
Like the real Thor is.
Oh, you said Thor. Yeah. I thought you said Galactus.
Oh,
like,
God, no.
God, that's a creeper.
No.
Can you imagine, like, if he showed up and he's like, hey, you're pregnant? Like, that would be creepy. That would be the positively most creepy, because it's just this giant head. Well, it depends, of course. If you go with the Fantastic Four 2 movie, he's just a cloud creature.
Wait. There was no Fantastic Four 2 movie. Nope.
Yes, there was.
No, there
Silver
wasn't.
Surfer.
It did not exist. It did not exist.
Bull honky.
It did not exist.
Anyway,
and neither of them are in continuity.
Thank you, Michael. Michael, back
don't care, okay? Stop ruining my stuff, Mike. Anyway, moving on, so shall we talk about the movie?
Yes, let's talk about the movie. Okay, one thing I didn't like, there was a lot of world building, but some things got better than others. Like, for example, that space station, which when they talked about it's a dead Titan said, I immediately thought of a certain author's book on this podcast for
what?
but then when we get inside, that never really go with that anyway. Okay, even inside, it's just a confusing maze of stuff. And okay, it's a cool idea. We see that one exterior shot, and then there's nothing else to that. Like it could just be any old space station. And I thought that was a wasted opportunity to show just how cool and weird that space station was. I forgot its name offhand. I know I've seen it in the comics. But yeah. So I and also the different factions in the Marvel Cinematic Universe's spaces are not all entirely clear. Who is what, who is against whom, what is what. We get that it's not quite gelling as far as the stakes. Okay, this guy, the main bad guy is going after this one planet, but how much is that in the whole scheme of things with all the other planets in the galaxy? You know what I mean? Or was I the only person who felt this way?
Maybe it's because I have some foreknowledge of the comics, because Ronan is a Kree, and he's a Kree fanatic.
Right, I'm trying to sever comics continuity from movie continuity. I know who the Kree are, but how big are the Kree in the cinematic universe? Are the Shi'ar in this universe? And so on. Or the Spartoi in this universe, you know?
We don't know yet because we haven't gotten that far.
It was a little hand wavy. I agree. Yeah.
Because there's no Kree to contrast it to, except for the one scene of the Kree commander who is established to identify that Ronan is not part of the Kree, but there's no indication of what the rest of the Kree are doing.
And how big and bad they are in this world. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or what their deal is.
Yeah.
I think it's been, you know, my encounters with them so far in the past, and also very, very brief that I, you know, my experience of them was just random alien dudes that, these other random alien dudes had a war with, and it's now settled except for this evil random bad guy dude. I just kind of went with it.
I took that as them trying to scale it down enough so that they could have a contained story, because otherwise it's just so much to try to, like, okay, well, now we're going to have this Kree fanatic, but nope, we have to explain who the Kree are and why they're important in this world. Oh, but now we have to, like, well, where are the Kree in terms of the universe? Like, that, it's so far out where I saw them as going, like, yeah, we'll hand wave some of that other stuff because maybe we can come back to it later, but let's have at least this one globe of information that we're going to deal with, and anything outside of that we won't deal with, because
yeah,
otherwise
it didn't feel necessary.
On the other hand, it may not feel necessary, but okay, so if this planet falls, what is that, in to use the Wiemer stake scale, how big is that in the sense of the entire universe? Is that the entire Nova civilization? Is that one
does
planet?
It matter?
Yes,
billions and billions of people are dead.
It matters to me to know how big it is in the relation to other things. I'm now going to actually go to my Star Trek Generations rant. Star Trek Generations gets this wrong in that there's a planet that's going to be destroyed by that stupid Nexus wave thing, but we never actually see the planet or anyone on it. Here we at least have a sense of there's a planet, but how much does that compare to the rest of Nova Civilization? Is that their one planet? In which case, okay, this guy is not going for a wipeout one planet. I mean, he's going for genocide, in which case that makes what he's doing even more horrific and more understandable. But say, okay, it's a big galaxy. If he wipes out one planet, then in the scheme of things, so what? Especially as I was thinking, the more unsavory Guardians before they grow more backbones could just go to another planet, or could they? I mean, is this such an important planet that wiping it out, yeah, this is a BFD?
It's a planet of billions of people.
Right,
I mean, the fact that the Nova Central Command also is on that planet seems completely secondary to the fact that it's a planet full of billions of innocent people that are going to be exterminated by a guy who's then going to go and blow up more planets.
Is he? I don't know. That's
yeah, beautiful. He's a fucking fanatic. He's nuts. Yeah,
but if this is the only Nova planet, then, well, this is his one and done, and he's going to go for genocide in one
well,
shot. Okay.
I don't think that's ever implied that he's just going to go for a one shot. I think it's implied that he's going for supremacy.
It's explicitly stated that he's going to be taking out the entire galaxy, and they have to stop him here.
And that he's going to go after Thanos next.
Okay.
Well, but we don't care about Thanos because he's an asshole, but yeah. Also, he's got a weird face.
Okay, I will back down and let somebody else talk because I've been babbling.
Okay. David, was that your hand was for that?
Yeah, but I guess the my one reservation I did have, and this is not necessarily specific to this film, but one that is I think fairly common to the Marvel films, whether from Marvel Studios or the outlying ones, in that they tend to be quite hermetic, in that they refer constantly to themselves or to the other films in the franchises, but they are. I don't know. I'm not going to say that they aren't about anything else because no film is, but they aren't. They don't reach out as much as, say, something like The Dark Knight does, where you're constantly, you know, seeing it, you know, in conversation with our, you know, concerns and anxieties. Whereas one of the things that. That stood out about Winter Soldier, was that it did, and still, even it doesn't do it as much as, I would say anywhere nearly as much as something like The Dark Knight. But it's one of the rare Marvel films that really does seem to be doing that. And so, I mean, it's not a deal breaker for me by any means. And, I had a huge amount of fun with it, but it did feel to me that the Guardians of the Galaxy again had that same kind of hermetic quality.
But the
Avengers had very much as well.
Both of those Marvel films are so thematically and structurally distinct from The Dark Knight. The stakes are different. The tone is different. The power levels are different. So that I don't know if it's fair to judge either by the other's rubric.
Well, yeah, and I realize it's a slightly apples and oranges comparison. And I realize that's very much the agenda of The Dark Knight. But I guess and I'm certainly open to being proven completely wrong here. It's something that has felt to me like a trend in these films that they kind of look inwards and to their own, the references are primarily to the other fictional constructs. I remember David Cronenberg criticizing Quentin Tarantino's movies as that they're not about anything except other movies. And I don't know if I would go as far in this instance, but I think there's some of that. And again, I wouldn't say that's exclusive to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Anyone have any thoughts on that? Mike does.
So I think the thing that I would give the Marvel movies the pass along that axis is the fact that in exchange for not having as much kind of sociological thematic resonance, they are a complex interweaving of 10 or more films into a mega continuity, which sometimes the films do more or less interweaving. Like we see a dark elf from Svartalfheim in the collector's collection, and we see a Chitauri, but we don't have any other indication about Yggdrasil or the Thor side of cosmic continuity. So that's a place where there could be more interconnection. But the simple fact that each of these films fits into a mega continuity means that on that structural level, it is, you know, skyscraper head and shoulders above what The Dark Knight does. And The Dark Knight, and that trilogy by comparison, is insular.
Well, certainly, and I would grant that the meta-continuity is something impressive in and of itself and that we've never seen before.
No, we certainly, no, we haven't. And it's the only one currently in existence. in the film, at least in films. I can't think of any other example.
No, there's some hints, there's some things that have been a little bit like that in the past, but nowhere near on this scale.
Yeah, I mean, that's something really impressive that Marvel's been able to do. What is, just the massiveness of what they're doing. And of course, we haven't even seen all of the possible characters they're going to make movies about. I mean, we know we got Ant-Man coming, and then there are even more that we don't even know what they're going to be, but we know some of them are not going to be Avengers, Iron Man, and Captain America, or Thor. So there are going to be other characters they're going to be introducing in films. I mean, it just gets massive.
But that goes to two problems. One that David mentioned before, the fact that if they're not careful, then you wind up with movies that are so wrapped up in continuity that if you haven't seen the other movies, you're completely at sea.
Well, I think Guardians of the Galaxy is the answer to that, because that does bust
the other problem with having too many movies and such a large edifice is that, oh, I just lost my thought for a second. Never mind.
Okay.
Unless it comes to me. No, I think I lost. Also, David was talking about like things like Easter eggs and credit cookies, and they're being used more as to push on the movies rather than just to be as fun things. Again, Guardians of the Galaxy is, whether you like the character in the credit cookie or not, is an exception to that rule. But, well, I mean, for a while now, we seem to be just having setups for other Marvel movies inside for the credit cookies rather than just being fun stuff.
Yeah.
They seem to be marketing rather than joy.
Yeah, I feel like that's been true for some of the credit, the Easter eggs and the credits that have come up, that they have not always been about setting up something interesting to come later. In this particular case, Guardians of the Galaxy was a Howard the Duck reference, which, fuck Howard the Duck, but
hold on there.
Whoa. Howard the Duck reference.
Now we're having a fight.
Howard the Duck. You like Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck was one of the great characters of the 70s. A wonderful creation.
I hate you, David. Did you not watch the movie?
Yes, and that movie is an atrocity, but I'm talking about the comics here.
Yeah, I don't care about the comics because the movie ruined them.
Now, they still exist.
No, it ruined them. They exist. That's not a question. I'm not questioning their existence, David. I'm questioning the validity in contemporary culture after George Lucas touched it.
So you're saying that one bad film about any character ruins that character forever?
Have there been any other Howard the Duck films? I rest my case.
I did remember my other point, though.
Go ahead, Paul.
Trying to keep the tumbleweed from blowing between the two of you and you two going into a laser gun shootout fight before my eyes. My other point is, if you're not careful with this sort of careful continuity, then movies that don't reference or don't connect with other movies seem wrong. Like, for example, Iron Man 3 or Captain America 2 seem a little almost too disconnected from the other Avengers. Whereas I would have thought that they could have done a little better to explain why the other, I mean, especially Iron Man 3, which has a whole global worldwide problem. Where the hell are there other Avengers? And why aren't they on board with dealing with the problem at hand? Why is it Iron Man alone?
Did you not see Thor 2 and Captain America 2?
They
have their own shit to deal with, man. They're superheroes. They're not gods.
Yeah, but five
except
seconds.
One of them.
Thor is a god.
Yeah.
5 seconds each of, you know, why isn't Stark doing anything about this? Oh, well, Stark has his own problems. Like, that's 2 seconds, and
yes,
you establish.
Right, but they don't even bother with that much. And so you're left to wonder. I mean, you could headcanon that, but that's not what's on the screen.
That's because it's giving the fan artists all an opportunity to come up with hilarious reasons why, you know, say, Hawkeye is nowhere to be seen.
They're working in coffee shops and being shipped together.
Yes.
Sounds awesome.
Oh, coffee shop AU, I love you so.
He's rescuing baby birds from trees. Actually, knowing Clint Barton, he's like, you know, somersaulting backwards off of a fire escape while dressed in nothing while people are shooting at him and going, I make poor life choices!
Yeah, he's just... The MCU Hawkeye is actually having the Matt Fraction Hawkeye adventures.
Yes!
But only if that means that we get Pizza Dog in the next Avengers movie.
Yes!
Please!
Pizza Dog!
Please!
We have gone way off topic.
A Hawkeye and a Black Widow movie.
No, it's a Hawkeye and Black Widow movie, just a Black Widow movie.
Yeah, and Hawkeye can be her
sidekick.
Candy for the movie. Yes, he can be your sidekick.
That would be cool. I'd watch that.
And I would give you anything if I can just get to hear Jeremy Renner say, caca, motherfuckers. Or he'd like say it and then like a truck would drive by so the fuckers part gets like, you know, noise canceled out and then they can keep their rating.
Well, actually, on that note, there was an interesting speculation about where all of the because based on what happened in Captain America 2 with the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D., where things may be going, and there was a speculation that maybe at some point we'll get a Secret Avengers movie, which would be only the spies. It would be, you know, Hawkeye, Black Widow, Nick Fury, etc. as a possible movie to come.
Sure.
Which would be really cool.
I'd rather have that than a stupid Ant-Man movie.
Yes.
Yeah, I kind of don't care about Ant-Man. It's like, eh, he's Ant-Man. Whatever.
I stopped giving a shit.
Especially if they're just erasing Wasp, sorry.
Yeah!
Wait, are they really doing that?
She apparently doesn't exist. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck that shit.
But yeah, we're on a tangent.
That's stupid. I'm sorry. No, that's a tangent worth having. That's some bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of apologists out there being like, oh, well, mutant, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, they're fucking having Scarlet Witch. They're managing that. They
and
can
Quicksilver.
Manage, yeah, they can manage Janet. And she's so important. And it's like they're just erasing all the women. And instead it's all but we're having two different Ant-Mans in the Ant-Man movie somehow. But, you know, no Wasp.
Whatever. Apparently. That's just
One special white guy is not enough.
No.
Maybe we should actually go back to the movie.
We should. Well,
yes, definitely.
A little bit after, I think we're at about 40-something minutes, so maybe we get towards closing out on some final thoughts. Any last things people want to bring up? So we'll just start with you, Paul. Any last thoughts you want to bring up?
There are a couple of missteps. I didn't like the actual fight between the sisters. I don't think that was actually staged as well as it could have, especially as far as the stakes and the blocking of that final bit. But overall, I was really entertained by this movie. This movie was fun and entertaining, even with some of the more wincing stuff here and there, especially in the last act. What is it with these movies that are falling a bit to pieces in the last act? I don't know what's with that, but I need to own this on DVD. So, and then will as soon as it comes out. So I'm hooked on a feeling.
What about you, Mike?
So that's my perfect segue into coming back around to how much I loved the music in this film.
You're welcome.
And the fact that more than any of the other Marvel movies, to my knowledge, the soundtrack was both it resonated with the plot, it enhanced the plot, and it was part of the diegesis. Mm. It was important to the characters inside the narrative universe that Peter Quill had, you know, carried this artifact of his mother's along with him, and that this was the way to bring familiarity into space. And it was a kind of secret language that he had to himself, but then branched out and started to share with these people as they came into his life. He shares music with Gamora, and then we see that his music kind of connecting with other people in the team in the end, especially with the first credit sequence. So that I loved how important the music was and how distinct it made it. And just the fact that you get Peter Quill like raising the roof as the title card comes on. And that just told me right away, like, I'm going to have fun with this movie.
And then he dances.
Dances on an alien planet. Yeah, that was great. That really set the stage, as Mike said, for how this movie is going to go early. It's like, okay, I can deal with this.
Great. All right, David, what about you?
And setting aside the reservations that we did bring up, I mean, it was just so much fun. I was giggling over various lines days afterwards. That our final boss fight begins with, an inane dance routine on the part of our hero. That makes up for a lot. You can get away with a lot if you pull off something like that. So kudos.
Yeah. I love that scene. Rachel?
I mean, there's not a whole lot of thoughts that I have about why I loved it that everyone else hasn't already said. I mean, for me, it's just like all Rocket and Groot and it was such a fun movie. And then, even like the little thing in the end with Tiny Dancing Groot was just, everything was really fun. I loved so much of it. For all of my complaints, like it was a fun, fun movie.
Yeah. I love Drax. He looks over and
he just stops.
Yep. I love that. It was so beautiful. Oh, Drax. I just want to hug him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
you want to touch his biceps?
Yeah, yeah, I wouldn't mind. Sure.
Dave Bautista's got some nice biceps too,
Drag expectation.
I've never touched alien biceps, so. Talking about Drax, not Bautista. Like, come on now. Fictional characters. Any case. I'll say some final thoughts. Some things that that we didn't raise. I really hated that one brief moment where, Star-Lord like thinks that Gamora's his mom. I really hated that part. I just felt like that didn't need to be there.
That, remember.
You did mention it, I think, like very briefly at some point, but I that seemed to come out of nowhere and didn't really, like, I thought that they were trying to do this whole thing where like they were like, oh, this is his new family now. And like, that's the suggestion we're making. Like Gamora is like his replacement mom. But then I was like, but that really doesn't work. And it's really weird. And it's just not explained, and it's just kind of, it doesn't work for that moment. I just wish they had just not done that at all together. Cause I think that the more impactful thing is actually when he opens the gift that he gets at the very beginning, when he's too afraid, to touch his mother's hand while she's dying, and he gets that tape, and that's what he finds out. He finds out it's his tape. I thought that was much more beautiful, and I thought that was a much better moment to share with Gamora, even briefly, than it was that sort of like, he thinks he's just a space mom, but like, whatever. But overall, I would agree with everybody else that, there was so much to love about this film. There were so many ways it could have gone horribly, painfully, terribly wrong. Like, Rocket could have looked stupid. He could have been voiced wrong. Groot could have been dumb. Any of these characters could have failed miserably, and only the secondary ones, I think, are the ones that really were at risk of failure. We've already talked about some of that. But overall, it's just too much fun. It's the kind of film that I feel like you can just watch over and over and over just for the fun. Like when you were saying that this is the best Star Wars movie we've had since Return of the Jedi. I don't know if that's the exact way you would put it, but that's how I would put it. But I totally agree, because there's something about even original Star Wars, you can just watch it because it's just great fun. It's a great rip-roaring adventure, and that's what this is. It's a rip-roaring adventure. So, all right. So I guess it's time for us to make our grade. So, Paul, you're first up. What grade would you give this?
I'll go relatively simple. Even given its flaws, I think this movie gets an A, and $400 million at the box office kind of agrees with me.
500. It's over 500 now.
Oh, it's over 500. Even more so, yeah. I think people really latched onto this movie. I latched onto this movie. This is the kind of movie I would love to watch. This kind of movie affair I'd like this. If I'm sick, this is the kind of movie I would put on. Like, total tangent. I was sick a couple years ago, and I had a choice between watching Iron Man or The Dark Knight, or the second Dark Knight movie. I put the first Iron Man movie on because I wanted something fun. This is the sort of movie I would put on if I was sick in bed, because it would just be so much fun to make me feel better.
Yeah, I like that. I agree with you. It's like it's a feel good movie.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's even better than the A you gave it, Paul. So good job. What about you, Mike?
I'm going to have to mark it down to an A-, despite huge amounts of love and appreciation, very much in the same way that Paul said. But there are things that are just dumb weaknesses that I think could have easily been accommodated for that I can't let go kind of unaddressed. So I love it to pieces, but it's an A- for me.
Okay, David?
Probably much the same as Mike. I'm sort of wavering between a B plus and an A minus, but I think I'll settle on an A minus.
All right. Rachel?
Well, I'll be the one who's the party pooper, because I'll actually go down to a B plus, and it's for all the same reasons where, you know, it's hugely fun. It has some flaws, but the reason it gets a B plus instead of an A minus is because it pretty much fails the Bechdel test.
I can't recall if Nebula and Gamora ever have a conversation where a dude's not the object.
No, because they talk about their daddy issues.
Right. Which, yep. Do they once have a conversation about blowing up a planet? Does that count?
I don't think so, because then it's about daddy, so.
It's still about daddy. Yeah, it's still surrounding daddy. Yeah.
Which makes me sad. But then again, if you read the tie-in comic, they basically only ever really argue about daddy, so I don't know. I just wanted a little bit more, but it was so fun, and I'm super excited because it was the first of the Marvel franchise movies written by a woman, and that's really awesome too.
Yep. Yeah, that's actually very good. Yeah. Well, I'll go with Mike and David's score at A-. I think because I agree with you, Rachel, and I think normally I would give this maybe a B+. Based on some of its flaws, which I think are significant flaws, but I think the amount of enjoyment that I got outweighs that just slightly. And so I have to give it an A-, because it was too much fun for me.
My grade is obviously too high. I obviously graded this way too high on a curve.
No. Okay. See, it's perfect, because now your A balances out my B+, so then it's like a solid A- across the board.
Yeah, it works out.
Yeah, no fudging of the figures.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or did you just want to make it like way harder for Sean to actually calculate?
Oh, I don't do that for these.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I was going to
do that for Torture Cinema.
It's like an A- and 3/4. Like,
I just do ish. I just put ish at the end. Whatever is the, So like A-ish, A-ish. That's what I put.
Oh, now it's a perfect A-.
Now it's a perfect A-. Perfect. Alrighty. So on that note, we need to close this out. So if anybody would like to put up their thoughts, you can obviously do that at skiffyfanny.com. Just find the post for this, and let us know your thoughts, and email and all that kind of stuff would be at the end of the episode. But do let us know what you thought about Guardians of the Galaxy, whether you agreed with us or whatever. So, and I guess I should say thank you to all of the people. So thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
And thank you, Rachel.
You're welcome, citizen.
And on that note, awkward ending and scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
skiffyandfanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@skiffyandfanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
skiffyandfanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I pass in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.